about finding something like this.
Sorry, I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, I'm Zilman from the Trade and Industry Department.
Good morning, I'm Brendan Vickers from the DEI focusing on international trade.
Incentive program, almost R1 billion of incentive we put into this industry. We can say the industry has stabilized and even some
job improvement now. And then two new industries that has been, created in the country. 10 years ago, there was no real business processing outsourcing center or activity in the country. And also, we had a very small coal industry. You will see later on that both those sectors have been now firmly established in the country. I think the message we want to say is that it shows that industrial policy was the softly targeted interventions. We can reindustrialize the country, and that we should now move towards extending it to more sectors of the economy. Then also one of the other highlights is that, as you know, we've had serious problems with CIPRO and the registration of companies for a number of years. We can say that over the last financial year, we've stabilized the situation with regards to the company commission. Similarly, the last 2 points is really work in progress, but we can say we're starting to make interventions in the area of small business and cooperatives, and then we, which we will come to later, we are trying to diversify our trade, so small and growing, but to a diversify manufactured exports to China and onto the continent as we grow. That is work if we just look very quickly at the economic context, as you is clear is that the performance of our tradable sector, that is our manufacturing, mining and agricultural sector, is obviously dependent on the demand from abroad. And it's very much affected by developments in the global economy. What we can say is that we are still our exports are still suffering from the slowdown in Europe, and the debt crisis is continuing. And whilst I think the situation will hopefully stabilize in the next few months in Europe, we don't see any massive increase in our demand for our exports. So we need stability. As you see, the global growth has slowed down, and that is why we make the point that fortunately, some of the developing countries and countries on the continent are growing, and we need to diversify our exports into new markets. And so I think this slide really just gives you a trend of what has been happening in the manufacturing sector, but in the real economy, especially. Now, as you can see, whilst we took during the recession of 2008-2009, we can see there was a massive decline in the manufacturing sector, but there was also massive job losses of about 600,000 jobs and a decline in manufacturing volume. The only positive story we can say is that since the beginning of 2011, we have seen now a pickup again, both in jobs and in manufacturing value and in investment level. And what can one say, even for this year now, the trend is continuing. There is a turnaround from the lows we had in the economy. As I indicated again, our investment performance has been, since the low points in 2009-10, since 2011 and the year under review, we've seen an increase in gross capital exploration, 4.4% from the 1.6% and similarly, we've made increased investment from both the public and the private sector, and increase of 7.3% for the public sector. I think again, this slide again just gives you a simple picture of what has been happening in our economy. In fact, the most important one is just the FDI, foreign direct investment, compared to the sort of hot money or portfolio investment. If you look at it, you can see that in 2009, we attracted 58 million rands of foreign investment. Then we had a sharp drop in 2010 of only 9 billion attracted. Then you can see in 2011, there was a recovery, as the slide right on the left-hand side. So it's back to 48 billion. And that is the overall theme, and we'll show you later on. There's been an encouraging recovery in foreign direct investment into the manufacturing sector. But as you can see on the portfolio inflows are still, and it's even been worsened by the current crisis we face. But it is on the FDI front. as I said, there is a possible story. You can just look at overall our investment performance. We place our improvement in the year under review. Big retailers, Boschini, Truett and Edgars, to start sourcing locally. and that has been quite successful, with even Hoshimi now buying Prestige Clothing, which is a clothing company. So really showing the support for local industry. We hope this is obviously going to be extended now to the other really big ones, which is Woolworth, to bring them in as well into this chain. This is just a quick overview of some of the big ones I've mentioned. As you can see, some of them are quite job intensive. Emphasize with 5,000 jobs and then Amazon with over 1,000 employees in these call centers or UPS centers. So this just gives you some of the highlights. This is some of the major investments that we've attracted. As you can see, it's a mix of local, international and African companies. Sefaku Cement is a Nigerian company. They've made major investments in our industry, in the cement industry. We've got Unilever and Nestle, global company, and then we've also got the local ones like Saki and Sasson. These are some of the ones where we have given tax incentives to for their investment. And as I indicated, also the foam industry, we've done a large number of productions that have been made in the country, right from the safe house, which was actually used taped out at the backdrop for that sector. But again, this industry has taken over. This is just an overview of the all our incentives schemes. As you can see, we have two different types of incentives. The one is the ones at the bottom is the broadening participation incentive, which is really assistance to co-ops, black business, and cooperatives. And there you can see we've helped at least over 1,000 companies in that regard. And then the top one is our industrial incentives, which is the automotive, the enterprise investment program, and so on. But let's just try to summarize a number of pages in the annual report about the number of companies we've assisted with our incentives. If we go to broadening participation, I think we'll just really highlight two programs. The one is our main focus has been to extend our network to all areas of the country, and that is to see the offices, branches, and information kiosks. And then the other important initiative is the incubators. We have currently 34 incubators where we try to nurture and provide support to small businesses. But also we now have developed a partnership with the private sector, and we have received 44 proposals for 44 new incubators to be opened as joint partnership programs with the private sector. And that is going to be one of our main instruments to support new entrepreneurs. Similarly, our work with regard to, let's say, dealing with some of the other constraints faced by small business, especially red tape and too many regulations and forms, and we conduct workshops with all municipalities to try to see how to reduce red tape for small businesses. Again, on this slide, this is all part of small business and black economic empowerment. I want to really highlight the point at the bottom where Senior has got a hard time going, because as we know, many companies are not, small business are paid very late, mostly in the public sector, but also in the private sector, but we're trying to see that they get paid within 30 days and even within 15 days, and we have a hotline where companies aren't paid, they can phone Senior and then we contact the department. That has been a program where we've been able to assist 300 million of payments. This is some of the work. The other areas you can see is our work around supporting industrial clusters, and then you can see the work we do by another place. Turning to black economic empowerment, we released the Code of Good Practice. As you know, they are both we've got an amended legislation which will shortly be with you, and we've also the Code of Good Practice, and we are in the process of now inviting both the Act and the Code. On a little Chair, I'm just going to just very quickly, not talk to this side, but this side, please. Can you just show the geographic spread as per your request at previous meetings that you just show? You will see through this breakdown that in terms of our industrial incentives, which you will see later on, there they are still following the old pattern of mainly being concentrated in Gauteng, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and I would say parts of PE and London. But they're following the industrial map and stuff. But we do see at least a better spread and of some of our broadening participation incentive, that is support for cooperatives, support for black business, and support for small businesses. The EIP program, and as I said, I'm won't speak in too much detail, but you can see that the spread is at least in all provinces with regard to these incentives. And then, as I indicated, with our investment incentives, we can see there is still the concentration in the main metropole, and that is why, you know, we are introducing 10 new special economic zones for each province where I think the attempt is going to be to ensure that we also have a new investment into all parts of the country, the proper geographic space. Very quickly, as I said, we will be expanding the number of IDs, but the performance of the current ones in the year under review, as I indicated, Kuka attracted 4 billion rands worth of investment, and I think we can also say now that after many years of being a white elephant, the elephant is becoming a bit darker and we will be a black elephant soon. But you see that we've attracted some key investments into Kuka and hopefully that will expand, and similarly in East London. Then, in interest way, the work is still continuing just on providing the bulk services which is needed before investment can really take place. But that's the performance of the IDB. As I said, not what was predicted, but at least the investments are starting to come in. If we look overall, as I indicated here again, and I won't go into detail, but the investment pipeline is since 2011 has turned positive again, but 40 billion. And there you can see again the figures for some of the big projects, and because of our growing market and also the growing market on the continent, you see that the Procter & Gamble, the Unilevers are all expanding their operation, but also we've got new people coming in like LG from Korea and other multinationals coming into the country. And then the other one I can highlight is just one of the successes of our foreign investment missions has been the achievement of AXA to run the Sao Paulo airport, which as you know is going to be for the 2014 Soccer World Cup, but we won the concession to be able to run that airport, and that investment is going to be quite large. Again, we'll just give some provincial spread. As you know, to allow small companies to display their products on international trade shows, pavilions, and so on in our export marketing investment assistance program, this slide just gives you the spread. And as you see, while there's still a bit of a concentration in the big areas, there is at least all parts of the country are participating in this program. Similarly, this slide gives you also some of the exports we've managed to promote from these areas, from all these areas. This again is also from the trading investment side, different parts of the country. Then just turning to the trade dimension and the regional integration agenda. You can see we've been doing work but basically within the SADC region and especially to ensure that the agreement that we reached about getting almost all of our tariffs or up to 90% of our tariffs at zero. Because as you can see, many of the companies that are investing in the country are doing so because they can export duty-free into the rest of SADC and into the fund pool. So that's why these agreements are very important, that we get duty-free tariffs in these areas. And then the big one that work was done in 2011-2012 was the Grand Free Trade Area, which is the one of SADC, COMESA, and East Africa Community, which is the 26 countries that will also be in touch with a free trade area that we are working with. So that the heads of state met in last year and launched and set a 3-year agenda for us to finalize this free trade area, which, as I said, will again facilitate exports into our country, because we will use it as a platform to exploit. Under this agreement, we'll be able to go right up to Egypt and the new markets in the country. At the bilateral level, as you can see, we've been active, especially in terms of the continent, where we've done 6 trade and investment missions, and this is part of, as I indicated, diversifying some of our exports to the continent. If you then finally turn to some of the multilateral issues, which is the BRICS. As I indicated, we have got a slowdown in Europe, which takes the bulk of our manufactured exports. And we've indicated that the growing markets, but our share is still very small in these markets. We've been working with the BRICS. Other countries, if I can use an example, other countries like France, for example, have moved into the Chinese market 5-10 years ago, and now they hold over 40% of the wine market in China. South Africa only holds 7% of the big Chinese market, and that is why there is potential for growth, but we're going to need to do much more investment missions and allow companies to participate in that, and that is some of the work we have in the big market and some of the projects we are doing. And as I said, I just come back a few weeks ago, but we did the second, where we took last year, we took about 80 companies, 70 companies to China, to Beijing and Shanghai, and this year again. As I said, we're starting off from a very low base, but there is definitely positive progress with people, especially because in some of our food products, some of our wine products, some of our Moet and wool products. Then I think, as you said, we are still trying to finalize the European trade agreement, but that was still ongoing. On the regulatory front, besides the investment work and the industrial policy work, we also introduced the following bills. The one was the Market Amendment Bill, which hopefully will be finalized this year still, but that was introduced. Also the gambling review, which I know is currently before you, but we are looking for retabled a report on the review of our gambling legislation. We've also tabled the SEZ bill, the BD bill, and the other ones were finalized. This slide just indicates some of the new institutions that has been set up under the Companies Act, especially the Security Regulatory Panel, the Takeover Panel, and the Financial Reporting Standards Council. So this, as I indicated, just highlights some of the consumer and regulatory work of the department. This also, as you know, we are responsible for liquor legislation, and as you can see with this slide, as the Cruza capital of the world, you can see that we have a very good geographic spread of our liquor licenses. So that just gives the number of licenses and licenses, even more than paper, almost equal to how many we've got. I then turn to some of the, moving on from some of the activities of the department to the department itself and our administration and coordination. As you know, the report we gave to you last year, what was highlighted was the unaccessible and very high vacancy rate in the government as a whole, but also in the department. And as you can see, the year under review, we've managed to make some dent on our vacancy rate and brought it down to below 10%. And that has been achieved. And I want, and then secondly, the only further point I want to highlight is we are, as a department, championing small business. We are we working very hard on making our payments within 21 days for SMEs, and as you can see, we've achieved the 90% target. And then with regard to equity issues, you can see within the senior management of the department, we had 43% with regard to holding the leadership of the women in the department. Also, we very much engaged in trying to take the programs of the DTI and our incentives to all the provinces, and this slide just gives you an overview of the DTI taking the people program across the provinces. If we look at our more detail at our vacancies, as you know, because we employ about 1,300 people in the department, we still have vacancies outstanding of over 100, but it's now come down to 4.5%, and that just gives you some of the detail on that program. As you know, we're also responsible for 16 agencies of the department, which we have to oversee in addition to the department work. And as I said, the minister does have regular engagements with them, and as I said, we have a dedicated team that looks at managing the governance in these agencies. But as I said, we have experienced some problems of governance issues in some of our agencies, but we have made the interventions to stabilize matters and put in place. We suspended staff that were accused of any fraud or corruption, and we've appointed new people, and some of the intervention was in the State Agency Board, which you're aware of, the National NLCS, the National Consumer Commission, but all those interventions, I think, have stabilized the situation. And then finally, turn just to the financial management. As you can see, our budget has been growing. What we pleased to report is that we have significantly reduced our underspending by bringing it down to 1.1% underspending. So while the figure is still 75 million, but that is the trend downwards with regards to this just gives you a more detailed breakdown of which are the items where we have been the highest understanding. This table just gives you a comparison with the previous years. As you can see, in 2010, 2011, we had a high level of understanding of over 6%, but as I indicated, the trend is downwards and upwards. If we look at the other major items of underspending, it is mainly in terms of goods and services, and especially with our accounts that we've seen from DERCO with regard to our 26 offices abroad, and then some 10 million incentives where companies didn't claim incentives before they end up financially. Turning to the Auditor General's report, we did receive an unqualified audit report, and as I said, there were some matters that we dealt with successfully and some matters that are still outstanding. We managed to deal with the issue of performance information and asset management, and that matters were then not highlighted by the Auditor General. But they did raise two issues with us, which we are addressing. The one is the issue of contingent liabilities, that is how we account for our incentive, which are paying in future years. But the major item that was raised in the Auditor General's report was one of irregular expenditure. But if I can explain that, just not unauthorized expenditure. It's irregular, it's really technically irregular expenditure. That is sometimes when you book a hotel for somebody that's going to the island, you must unfortunately, in terms of our current regulation, you must get three quotes. And sometimes it's not possible to get three quotes because usually the foreign mission will tell you that this is the recommended place. Or when we host major conferences like we did at Sandton Convention Center for heads of state, there's really not the National Intelligence Agency has only given that venue as a secure venue. So there are certain times when you can't get three quotes and you have to go for a single source. And it's all for expenditure under 500,000. All the others are, as you said, are put out to tender, and those ones are not a problem for us. But that has been highlighted by the Earth Agenda, and we are now putting in place mechanisms to ensure that we account properly for when we do have single source quotation, or when it can be justified. So whilst it is an issue of concern that was highlighted, they did highlight that none of it is fruitless expenditure or wasteful. We did get full value for money, it's just that we didn't get back the three quotations for some of the expenditures. Then finally, Honourable Chair, we can just look at the key challenges for the year. Obviously, as I indicated, whilst things do look positive in terms of the investments that we are seeing in the country. Obviously, our exports, and you can see, is really under threat from the slowdown in the global economy. And our exports are effectively down because of the and given the current crisis as well. We're also still facing challenges with regard to about two or three entities of the DTI that we are still need to improve the governance arrangements. And that remains a challenge. But the biggest one is going forward is really the last two points that we want to highlight. The one is we still believe that we are not doing enough with regard to cooperatives and small black businesses getting them into the mainstream of the economy. Whilst we have some programs that have taken traction, the demand is very high, and we definitely see that as one of our biggest challenges. And then, as I indicated, in terms of our industrial policy, the jobs in the formal sector, as I think, they only arise in the medium term, but we have short-term urgent needs. So what we are currently addressing is how we can also combine short-term job creation whilst we hold our long-term potential in the various industries. Honourable Chair, I think that's how important it is.
Thank you very much. Congratulations on the birth of the boy. You have been in the family, efficiently the family.
upfront indicated that the issue for war with such as environmental disease is clear that it is a serious problem. But I'm one of those that are convinced that they could move ahead. I'll appreciate some of the policies that I have noted, comparatively speaking, to what has happened recently. How you are able to deal with this geographical spread, that is why we have that question now. It's assisting us as people representing interests of problems to relate to the problem that we are representing. It's a very good job. And I'll start with the positive to show that it's here we are taking some serious steps forward. The vacancy rate is a very good one. Even the issue of disability and the one of women in senior position and your staff can over. Those are very encouraging achievements and reports. But with that as it may, the few that you have to clarify is for us to make sure that in the next financial year it's better than this current financial year. I'll start by emphasizing, which is that in some of the departments that we are doing oversight, we always make it a point that if ever there's anything that is happening and the program of the parliament is allowing you to make it possible for us to be part, we have to make it possible that we are invited as members of parliament. For simple reason that it's a fact that in the absence of knowledge, perceptions become the reality. We are in a better position to engage with a report whenever we know a lot of things that are happening. My first question is, if you check almost all the programs, there is some variance. Maybe to do a little bit of elaboration for one to have a better sense why it's like that. Then the second one, it's in relation to the issue of not having a written policy on overtime. I remember very well it's an issue that was raised previously. And it seems as if we have been more than inch because even the AG is raising. Maybe if you can try to make us to understand why it's still a problem, that issue, because it's a clear violation of the public service regulation if you don't have that clear policy when it comes to overtime. The second one, is about the point that is saying as an accounting officer, the AG is saying you are not taking reasonable steps to prevent irregular and fruitless expenses. If you look at that point and the explanation you are giving towards the end, I think the last but one slide, how do you relate the two? I think you can assist us to have an understanding about that one. And the last one, on my part, the issue that has been asked by Honorable Mahin. Phrasing it differently, the issue of officials from the department that are performing remunerative work outside the employment in the department without a written permission, because it's a clear violation of the Public Service Act. Why it has to come to that? And if ever you pick it up, maybe take us through the steps that has been taken. But beyond that, Chairperson, I must emphasize that the report is really showing that in almost all the issues that were raised previously, there is serious improvement, and that is really encouraging. Thank you, Chairperson.
committee didn't achieve the goals that it was before. Probably due to quality, special program. But the main condition they did get that they didn't pay that because of it. And my question is, if it's said to special human rule, how do we see these bonus goals in the country as successful for regular business if we pay to the IGC? And I think the second last question is that it's on the jobs to another one, the Adam Abraham says that but for this current financial year, or rather this year, today, because 1,000 jobs have been created, you know, 31, and the majority of those are in the small and medium companies. My question is, since the SMMP, in most countries, in the developed countries, they are the major job creators, what is the mortality rate in South Africa of the SMMP? It was asked, in Soweto alone, last year, according to the Empowered Economy Center, they said that there were 5,000 cases in certain countries that started by GC before the SMMP came. I'm trying to find out this year, according to your knowledge, how many SMEs were there, what was the most important rate, and the job success rate. Was it working with 5,000 dinner, the system? It goes back to the phasing out of seafood and the new commission of the system. Now, the Cross Commission Act was hailed as the most successful in South Africa now by most oil countries that it was easy to have the company in South Africa and to set up business centers. But this is phasing out of people or close operation. Some people are putting all of that, what are the experiences of men from the community, you know. So you cannot accept that the peaceful experience is to be positive or racist approach. Yes, that's why. I have no anything prior to the racist prayer. And it's actually better for you know, more than anything that for instance, a register of the now, isn't that the way that you're dealing with the people who go on the other end? In my mind, if you want to try to fight fraud, because the fraud is so expensive, but on the other end, you are also limited to grow. Now, the question is, what effect has this change got as far as the energy that you've got to do?
Thank you, Chairperson. A lot of the questions have been covered. I am happy to see the good audit report. The thing that interests me is the CEDA hotline. And I would like more information on that, please, because if that is a safe place, without us who know how much state departments owe private enterprises money, then I'm sure we can work on the on promoting this hotline and receive more money. So I really would like even the number and the details and the setup of it. It's very important to me. And then when we come to the performance of the IDZ, has any special initiative, East London and Kufa, has any special rail lines been developed or even in the plan or the planning sessions for the coal mining that's going to take place in the Eastern Cape, number one. And then number two, this refinery now at Kufa, where are we going with that? Is it part of the process here? Are we going for now a gas setup, or are we going for oil situation? And I keep on asking, how is the fuel going to be transferred? And every time there's a deviating answer, and I know it's not your responsibility, but maybe you can shed some light on what is in the pipeline on project being planned, or which may have been researched until now. I hope the South African people that fly from a new South African airport don't pay for the project in Brazil. Because our taxes are very high when it comes to ACTA. I hope you made them strong enough to operate on their own. Then your exports to China, to what extent are we doing raw materials exports versus the value added one, and are we trying to add to our smaller provinces or our like the Northern Cape and so on, where we need more economic activity to better the lives of all the people? And then my friend spoke about the liquor licenses. You know, we've just come from the Northern Cape, the Big Creek Park, Kenai District, where they've got the highest fecal syndrome in the world. And it's very important that we work on a strategy to support this database that you have, so that we can go to the local police throughout the provinces and say, you've got to close down, you've got to close down, it's not the right thing to do. On slide number 58, you say clearance of data, you say that they said fewer businesses have closed down, which is very encouraging because we've had a serious downturn in the economy. Now, to what extent have we managed in your department to clear the database of companies and PCs and co-ops that are not operational anymore? And I think that my last question goes about the single source quotation. And it's under 500,000 and it's 15,000 and are these a couple of big amounts? What's the total amount that's involved there? Because if it's once or twice, it's okay, but if it's a third time, and then what have you actually put in place to regulate that properly? And it's not an ugly question, it's a question for clarity also, because if you go to a small municipality like Ikwezi, for instance, and you want to have a Moe festival there, and you've got to get three quotes for accommodation, and there is just one guest house, what do you do? So it's that sort of thing where in the big areas it could be a security issue, but in the smaller rural areas or deep rural areas, you've got to take what you have. And that's the reason for the question. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I must say that the department is doing well, and the minister and the officials are trying their best. I can say that if folks come to power in 2014, that you might consider keeping some of the deployment.
I was dreaming.
Yeah. But say, be it as it may, that is the positive. On the negative side, Chair, it's still very dry in the northern Cape. Not raining again. The main dry region. We don't develop the economy, and we don't get ways and means to address that. And there's so much potential, you know, in terms of the mines, in terms of the alternative energy and so on. Which then brings me to the first issue, and that is the one about the special economic zones. I want to add my voice to the number of my colleagues that raised the issue.
I think there was a lot of expectations about the IDZ and the potential that they had when they coming around. But certainly, it seems that they didn't do it. Now, the critical question that one of my colleagues asked is, what will the special economic change be different to enhance the economic activities of our region? Then, Chairperson, the other criticism that I've got is the one that I've raised in previous occasions, and that is the one about the coordinated approach between dairy and rota. These various departments on the horizontal level or different spheres of government. We're experiencing now with the new rollout with all these alternative energy projects, where there's a very strong criticism from local authorities that they're not involved in the local economic development plan and structure of their projects. Now, it's not the department's fault. I think it's just rather fault. I don't know where we must go with it. Go to National Planning Commission or go to the Ministry of Metropolitan Department away, but certainly something needs to be done about that coordination. We're not succeeding to be respecting terms of that. Which brings me to the issue about localization, Jefferson. Jefferson, this department must be instrumental in making sure that the regulations that put in place by various departments are good. The best example, for instance, is the Department of Energy, which now got a massive rollout for solar energy. But despite the regulation, the product that comes in is of respect of inferior quality. But it's not also localized. So we tend to have a very structured society, but on issues that really matter, I don't think we can implement those regulations and bylaws and whatever. I also want to add my voice, Chairperson, to this abundance of liquor licenses. Really, it comes from me. I mean, year in and year out, if you talk about it. But come to the Northern Cape and I, you and your people go there. The people, our social fabric, disappear. So the only joy that people have is to get drunk, to be respected. It can't be like that. Then, Chair, the issue about the Competition Commission, I think there was only one entity that was more in court this year than Silk, and that was the Competition Commission. So, Gigi, can you maybe tell us what transpired to that whole saga, where we stand with that whole court basis? The consumer protection, sorry, not the consumer protection. Yeah, and then coming to the details, Gigi, if I go to page 158 of your report, the annual report. It seems that there's irregular expenses of 94 million. What was that about? 158. The number is there was quite a substantial increase from the previous year. It seems that was about 54 and then was about 62 million irregular expenses, page 158. Then on page 170, seems that they still are aftermath of the World Cup. I didn't know that the department paid 5 million rand for the World Cup, And I see members of parliament get some of them. I don't know what the Adams really got one, but we think that they're probably. Then page 185 is a lot of liability. Oh, I know you must make the reason for that, but maybe you can elaborate on the liability. There's something there that seems quite it's quite a lot. Statement of contingent liabilities, 185. It was almost 6 billion, not 6 million. So you can elaborate on that. And then here the whole issue about the consultants, almost 50 million rand that was used to be the consultants, going still 3-2. There's also a lot of time and relation spent on that. Then the third last issue, Chair, is the foreign economic offices. Now we had this debate in the past where we said we must empower these offices, but it seems problematic because whenever we go, the officials meet with us, please give us a bigger budget, because we understand we want to grow the economy, we want to make sure that our people, our exports are getting the necessary exposure and so on. What is the situation? How can we assist you? How can we engage with Delco and other role players to make that possible? The second part, I should say, is the issue about the triple P, no holding. It seems that there's a bit of an issue there. So maybe you can fill us in on that holding. Some of us were very critical about that in the past. And then the last issue, DG, which is not reflected, is where your department is one of six departments or so that's involved in that. That is the Employment Creation Fund. Now, that ECF, I asked a question to the Minister. Minister Patel responded on that the other day. But apparently they took out 1.3 billion rand in that fund. About that 1.3 billion, about 800, according to the Minister, 800 million was already allocated. Now, the issue is the following. I had interaction with some of the officials in the party. It is the turnaround time for the ECF is too slow. It can't take so long, more than a year, sometimes almost 18 months, for a project that's been approved to finalize and get the contract. And the issue then relating to that is how long will, or what is the scope for the rest of the almost 800 for the rest of the 500 million that they've spent. So that's my question, Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you. Tenders between 10,000 and 500,000. In terms of the regulations, you have to before you issue, you mustn't only ask for three quotes; you must also receive three quotes. So as I said, our category of non-compliant is in that area. There are a number of cases where we sometimes are not able to get three quotes. Because it's just not possible. For example, even for airline travel, if you're going to take a plane, even if you get, for example,
there are certain, even if an airline comes with a cheaper quote, you obviously don't take the cheaper quote, you have to. And as I was going to say, there are sometimes certain areas where you go to where there's only one hotel, which is definitely over the area and so on. So all I'm trying to explain is that when we have deviated from the three quotes, the reason that it's found to be illegal expenditure is because in terms of the delegation, the only person who can sign off that is the accounting officer. And if I do, if a deputy director general or chief director, that I have to formally give that person the authority to be able to also deviate from the three quote system. So what we didn't have assigned delegations done by the accounting officer. So that is the one we are now offering. We have now liberalized that. But in the year under review, we didn't have a proper set of delegations. So as that's why I'm saying I understand the amount is high, but as I said, all of those cases where we didn't get the three quotes back, that was fully justified. It wasn't that way we didn't do it. So as I'm saying, it is a problem, and as I said, we have addressed it now. But I think I'll ask the CFO to maybe just get a little bit more detail. And I actually think the one big question that was asked earlier about why is our incentive still concentrated in the four big provinces and why there hasn't been substantial change and so on. I think if I can take the example is that all the incentives, obviously if we take our automotive industry incentives. Now, the automotive companies are all located in only either in the Eastern Cape or in Durban or in Gauteng. And the reason they're located there is because that is the area where the market is, but also where they can have a full suppliers around them. And I think that, as I said, we're not going to get a change in that until we get in. If I can maybe deal with a thematic issue about the special economic zones in the high. Now, the industrial development zones was an initial attempt to try to diversify industrial activity. The reason we didn't succeed as much as we would like to is because we never really offered any special incentives in the Ivy days. So, for example, if you locate in Kuka, you don't get anything more than if you go into the rest of the PE area. There is no special incentive you get. Whereas in all other countries, what they have is they've got different tax rates. So for example, if you go to IDZ in Tanzania, you maybe pay 10% tax, whereas you pay 30% tax in the rest of the country. So the incentives are so structured that it's a real benefit for you to go into a high. So what is different then about the IDZ and the SEZ? We are going to have much better incentive packages for you if you go into a city. And as I said, to narrow your capability, but hopefully you're making a breakthrough of national territory, where we can say, if you go, well, we've already, fortunately, we've got it ready with a 12-I scheme, where you get a slightly better tax incentive if you go into a higher level of the, but we're also looking at the corporate tax, that you pay less if you go into a city, but also in terms of the financial. So that is the, as I said, that is what we are to achieve with the SEZ. I think the positive thing about the new SEZs now, we have worked with all the provinces, and as I said, with the new legislation and the new incentive regime, we've already, in collaboration with the provinces, identified 10 new special economic zones. And as I said, one of them, as was mentioned, in the Northern Cape, we're going to have the renewable energy solar park and related activities around especially economic zone. And as I said, if we've already got some financial resources for initiative, and hopefully we will get more on that. But we may not be able to further on that. I think that, as I can say from under the border, Nyambi, I think we will just explain in a bit more detail about the illegal expenditure, but an important issue you raise about the concern issue about people being employed in without a meaningful work. Now, when we determine the Auditor General, because they have a database across the government departments, they have been able to locate certain individuals that have tended for other government work or are in companies or are either directors in companies that have one government tender. And that is how they got a list of people who are in all government, across government. So, as I said, when we received this information, as I said, our policy is that if anybody has accepted the unit of work outside of the department without permission, we will immediately take this action. It is not allowed. So, as I said, we have issued a immediately after the AG highlighted this issue, we should have said to all staff to say, hey, if you do undertake any work, it will be disciplined, the action will be taken. And secondly, we've also as a policy and as a DTI responsible for me and others, we actually, amongst the senior management, we ask that nobody should have business interests in their health care. I think people must make a decision how you do business, then you must leave the DTI and find your business. But if you're in government, you can't answer that to such activities. So even if you declare, but I think it is a department responsible for so much incentives, so much things, you must have a clear separation. So we did take the, once it was reported to us, we do take it seriously and we will ensure that there's no moonlighting or there's no conflict of interest with the organization. With regard to Honourable Member Abrams, firstly, we'll give you the detail, but the 65,000 is the overall jobs in the economy, which is both formal and informal sector jobs. And so we'll be able to maybe supply you with a detailed breakdown of the composition of that, but the 365,000. But I can also just say for one of the later questions, it is the trend has continued. That is in 2011, 2012. And even just yesterday we got a report, again, even in the for the current period, there is also job creation of over 300,000. So as I said, the trend, we're not yet back at the level we were in 2009, but as I said, the trajectory is up in terms of, so 600,000 jobs over 2 years, that is roughly. So we'll also give you a more detailed breakdown on the items of the clothing and textile jobs across the country, and in terms of the incentive programs that we have there. And as I said, we will notify you about all the programs with regard to DTI to the people. Honourable Member Nguni, if you say where have been our flagship investments, as I indicated, there's two areas where we are consolidating major investments. The one is the automotive sector, where we've had big investments by almost every all of the companies, starting with BMW, starting with Volkswagen, going to the Toyota, going to Ford. And as I said, currently there are more investors in the country looking for opportunities. So that is definitely growing, and as I said, there are real investments in the business process and outsourcing. I agree the electricity is our biggest problem now, so we have to take our industry. We have made the representations even to different forums, but we really it is chasing away investment because we cannot prevent increases of up to 200-300% of the cost of the our biggest danger. We cannot, and the proposed increase of 26% for the new year is also a major but we are taking that up with our minister and the cabinet, and he's got a representation to the minister. with regard to Europe, as I said, the main sticking point in the EPA negotiations is now the fact that we said that we want greater access for our agriculture. Because they subsidize the agriculture sector, they have access to our markets. As I said, we've got beautiful access for a lot of other manufactured products, and but we are trying to now score for some of our agricultural products. I've dealt with the issue of the IDZs, and hopefully, as I said, this time the issue is more different because we will have tailor-made incentives for companies. On the question of the liquidations, I think in the slide presentation you will see that our death rate of companies is still very high, but it has come down. It is now it has come down from 3,900 companies that were liquidated. It came down to 3,500, a 10% decrease. So as I said, during the recession, and as I mentioned by Honourable Member Linden, SMEs were the first to suffer when the recession hit. But as I said, the situation has now, or let's say the death rate has reduced. Those figures are in the report on that. Yeah, the important issue is about close cooperation. I think maybe at another time somebody from the CCRD can give an explanation. But basically, when we did the revision of the companies, they didn't do away with the CCs, but basically the existing CCs could maintain their status. But any new application will be properly will be in terms of the company's registration. But what they have done is they've made that process for forming new companies, memorandums of association, much simpler. Now, I understand that in terms of the changeover, many companies were used to having CCs, and it was quick, it was easy to register and so on. In the changeover now, there is still, as I said, the company's office have reported, they're still taking, their lead times are still a bit long, but it is improving, and there's definitely improvement, and I think they will, over time, in the next year or so, they should be able to reduce turnaround times for registration of companies. But as I said, they can maybe give you a more detailed report on that and on the process. Similarly, also there was a question about deregistrations, and as I said, they've been working on deregistered companies that are dormant or not active. They've cleaned up their database, and as I said, that's something that's been reported. I will give you the archive number, but here we'll pass that over to you, which is the hotline, but that's a very important service. As I said, I can't speak too much about the refinery, but what I do know is that we have on some of the trade missions, they have been managed to secure Sinopec, some Chinese investors to come into that project. But I think really the aim, the discussion at the moment is that we are definitely going to have fuel needs in the future, and we need to start investing in that. But currently, the view of National Treasury and others is that the project is still, currently structured, is not viable. They need to still, as I said, revisit some of the cost estimates and the fundamentals of the project. And that is what is currently happening between the parties. By National Treasury at the moment. Yes, I think that, as you mentioned, with regard to the AXA, the rates have been especially high, but the good news is that they are coming down as from next year. There was obviously the increase in the AXA rates because of the 2010 investments, but the fact that they won the concession in Brazil will definitely improve their financial position in that year, and they are fast cheaper. With China, I think I've mentioned that the purposes of all our roadshow is really to promote the value-added products. Because currently about 90% of the exports is going to be there. And really, that your point is noted and you raised the issue of the SEZ, and I hope that, as I said, at least for the SEZ in the Northern Cape, I think that one is probably the furthest advanced, because they've already issued some of the holding of the solar energy projects have already been awarded, and I know they're now close to financial closure, so hopefully the construction phase will be starting. And as I said, we do have a team with the Northern Cape, and hopefully that's going to be soon with the municipality to the feasibility study for that will commence under considering the proposal at the moment. So hopefully, and as I said, if Tomato does get those tax incentives as well, we'll be able to get some of that to be going with that, especially for other families. But your point is obviously taken. I think any point similarly with the localization and the licenses. I think I would tend to report that with regard to the Consumer Commission, hopefully that story is at an end now, but as I said, we had four court cases, the court clearly laid down that the commissioner's contract was only for a period of 3 years. Obviously it was challenged. We got the cost awards against the commissioner for frivolous cases before the court, but as I said, hopefully it will be all out and solved. But as I said, the judgments were clear, I think the commissioner is still feeling that she had a right to the review of the contract. I don't know, maybe the listeners have been just comment around the bowling and soccer puts on that issue, soccer work. So I think it's... Then finally, it's a simple thing, I'll deal with some of the other issues, but then just on the ECF fund. I think, as you know, that is the employment creation fund is a donor fund, with funding from DFID, and with the UK one, and funding from USA and others. I think the problem with that fund is the structure is a very unwieldy one. It's not one of the BPI normal funds, which is jointly managed by four departments. So for every application, it's got the Director Generals of DTI, Economic Development, Department of Enterprises, and the Department of Science and Technology and so on. I have, as I said, and because of what, as I said, some of the cases, the long delays and also the underspending in the fund, or the lack of disbursements of the fund, that we need to complete the overhaul of this fund and make it much more, and I've had a discussion now with Economic Development and the chair of the cluster, and let's just give it either to the Department for Land or to Economic Development, but maybe probably best for us to run the fund. We will then report to the other department, and then as I said, we can then, my colleague here, put it into the incentive division, and then we can, as I said, we can implement them around times, which is much more. But as I said, we will definitely address that matter of the management of this fund. And as I said, the final point is just on the FERs. Yes, we're going to need your assistance in this regard, because as you know, if we're going to grow the economy further, the only means is going to be through exports. And especially exports onto the continent and exports to the fast-growing Asian market. And for that, as you know, all other countries, they do give very good support to the exporters. Again, we are going to be tabling proposals to National Treasury on how we can try to really assist our companies to open up the new market. As you know, previously we had the GICE scheme, but unfortunately it was a bit abused, the general export incentive scheme. But we think if we can reintroduce a scheme, but obviously properly functioning and properly governed, we can really try to assist our companies with the export. Thank you. I think we should maybe ask the CFO and the others.
Thank you, Chair. I will answer the
that we are
Negotiate. In other that we negotiated, I think it was the NA, the standard negotiated 5 years ago,
how to these bilateral agreements with other countries impact on our national codes? Because either we conform to those agreements or we conform to the national codes. So, what good things do we have as far as our national codes are concerned? We commit to the and then the second question is on the follow-up on ideas. One of the incentives in the World Cup was some countries and some political processes. So ideas led to find that the tax incentives, the labor incentives, and other more incentives in terms of work and in terms of support. Now, in our case, we've got the tax incentives. But the key issue that most people are concerned about the Free Market Foundation, the Free Market Foundation, is that the labor laws are very effective. Now, do you foresee starting to see in the present day where you find that the federal state labor market laws, EZ or IZ, and have you taken union on board about this issue?
The government is very vocal, and you also on not doing business with officials. But why then do we not get legislation through on that? If we really need business, why don't we have legislation? And then, do you have information or access to information on FDI in the provinces not sourced through government? By national government, that has come directly from the provinces. Do you understand what I'm saying? So for instance, our friend in the Eastern Cape goes overseas. She gave a big report this week of all her FDI in the province last week at the Parliament of the Speakers in PR. And the amount seems really big. Now, I want to know, can you tell whether that financing has come through your department, or is there some of that is coming into her own sources or private investment that is just walking the door?
About how negative investors become about South Africa. Now, I know your minister and your team have been running around after marijuana and after many things. But the biggest challenge collectively in South Africa is that government can create a climate that makes investors seem to come and invest. Now, unfortunately, we think that there is a threat that investors would love to come. And it's been reflected in the standard and poor ratings and all those other issues that we know that we have. So the department and the ministers, I know that they are doing that, but must acknowledge the fact that if we don't create that confidence, then we need to talk about it.
Thank you. This one more of a concern, maybe slightly. From 5.6 million was moved from Enterprise Investment Program Incentive Program C, and the reason for this was not provided. Similarly, if you check program the one for the 3 years, the budget for this program increases, but at the end of the financial year, the program is left with a supply, while monies are moved to other programs. This raises questions around planning and projection. So if you can clarify it on that one. Thanks, Chair.
Members, the Department has stated at the beginning of the meeting that the world has time to finalize everything. Some of the questions can be answered by the Department. We would really appreciate that, but it is the critical one to keep an answer.
Then I'll just ask Brendan from our international trade to just give a question from the
To the honourable member, I'm not sure specifically on the case that you were referring to, the country, but I think it was a broader question in terms of, you know, how is our trade negotiation supporting the government's national development objectives? And I think, you know, at the DPOI we have a very specific position that our trade policy and our trade negotiations must support industrial policy. So they must support the objectives of industrial development, employment growth, and value-added exports specifically. So, for example, if we look at in terms of our regional integration approach, in terms of the SADC free trade agreement, the tripartite free trade agreement that the DG alluded to, it's very significant that we see expanding market access into Africa having a direct impact on South Africa's industrial policy, because what we export to Africa is manufactured products compared to what we export to the rest of the world, which is commodities, raw materials, and minerals. So, for example, there's a direct linkage by opening up more market access for South African manufactured exports, leading directly to job creation and investment into the South African economy. So it's something we're very conscious of, and we try to, you know, when we look for market access concessions, to link those to the priority sectors identified in IPAC. So I hope that provides some perspective on the approach we've taken.
Just the issue on the
Can I make a quick follow-up on that? I do understand the answer. But then how do I measure it? Say under POTG, under the EU. How do you measure that impact as far as the trade negotiation is concerned? How do you measure that impact in the job creation? Is there any measure that you could say?
So, honourable member, I think we look at, you know, various indicators. For example, the growth in exports per year, you know, relative to where we've actually managed to get a market access concession, whether we've actually managed to grow exports in that sector, what the composition is, you know, are we diversifying the composition of our exports because we are trying to promote manufacturing. You mentioned a particular country, perhaps, or review process that you, if you could perhaps just indicate which review process that is that you were talking about.
I think there was specifically for the
moment. I think your point is that, for example, in our agreements with Mercosur, the EU and SADC, I think maybe we don't have a specific breakdown around exactly how much has trade increased after we signed those agreements or something. But I think what we can report on is definitely, I mean, the two big ones. The one we negotiated, the first one with the European Union. As I said, since that agreement came into effect in 2000, we had almost a quadrupling of our value-added exports into the European market. And that's why the EU is now our biggest market for manufactured products. And that's why we saw what it is. Secondly, our fastest growing market now, after the slowdown in Europe, is the SADC region, where we have, as I said, duty-free trade. So I mean, it's very clear that once we do get market access opportunities, our companies are able to follow up and use that market access concession. But as I said, maybe we can, in future, give you to show you the exact figures for how trade has been improving in those markets. If I can then very quickly just go through quickly to some of the other ones. The last question you asked is about the labour market regulations in IDZ. I think that we've seen that the biggest constraint for people coming to IDZ is not necessarily because they can get cheap labour, there's no trade unions and so on. I think most of the companies want is actually in terms of incentives to make the project financially viable and better than another location and so on. So I think that's the reason we try to emphasize more on the incentives to the independent. We will forward you that list of all the liquor that we can get from our regulatory the division of the liquor regulatory in the DTI. We'll try to forward you as much as we can. I think the question about this, the issue about us having introduced specific legislation with regard to the question of not having as you know, the current one, I mean, that's what I'm saying from DTI's point of view, with our SMS, we asked for a voluntary arrangement where people don't businesses outside of the department. But as I said, I take your point, but I do understand that there is going to be legislation that we see on us just of that. Of course, some people think it's a infringement of the constitutional rights and so on, but I think that probably there is growing support for that. We should just have a clear divide. I think maybe we will then forward you a little replies to some of the financial issues around the tire question and some of the transfers or vitamins between different lines and so on. We'll give you a full written response on that one to us specifically and Mr. Nyambi.
No, thank you, Mr. I've seen the work that they're doing, and I've seen that the
are your focuses? Not for long.
Yeah, you need to